Welcome back. It's a long way from living as a slave in St. Louis to winding up at the White House, but that was the path for Elizabeth Keckley, who became Mary Todd Lincoln's dressmaker. She lived as a slave in St. Louis in the mid-1800s. She was highly skilled as a seamstress who bought her freedom, then found her way to Washington and the White House as Mary Todd Lincoln's personal dressmaker and confidant. The story is told in Jennifer Shivarini's book, Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. The author found the story not in the history books, but in her discovery of an exquisite 1870s quilt, as she told St. Louis Public Radio's Erin Williams.
I actually started researching this story many years before I began to write it. When I was writing one of my other novels set during the Civil War, I was investigating Civil War era quilts, and I came across a photograph of a quilt that was very typical of the late 19th century in that it kind of bridged the piecework that came before and the crazy quilt styles that were just coming into heightened popularity. And this was a masterpiece of embroidery and stuffed work, and it also included some patriotic emblems, eagles embroidered in the borders, and words like liberty embroidered here and there. And the caption said that the quilt was attributed to Elizabeth Keckley, who had worked as Mrs. Lincoln's dressmaker during her time in the White House. And that idea just immediately captivated my imagination because I could imagine all of the history Elizabeth Keckley must have witnessed, working so closely with the First Lady, being a part of the First Family's household. And I just wish that I had known more about what conversations they shared and what Elizabeth Keckley's life during that time had been like.
Well, they came to each other, I believe it was the day she was officially hired, the day of the President Lincoln's first inauguration. And she came to Washington kind of to start her new life.
That's
because
right.
She spent a lot of her time here in St. Louis and before that in Virginia.
That's right. She was in St. Louis from 1847, and she was here for more than a decade. She was with the same white family, with one branch of the extended family to another. And she eventually came to St. Louis in the household of Hugh Garland, who worked as an attorney here in St. Louis. And he was not very eager to let Elizabeth Keckley have her freedom, but she kept asking him to set a price and let her buy her freedom and her son's. And eventually she wore him down and he named $1,200, which, considering that she could probably earn about $3 a day, was an enormous sum, almost impossible to reach. She did manage to come up with that money thanks to loans from many of her very satisfied customers in the St. Louis area. So it was really because of their appreciation for her, not only as a dressmaker, but also as a woman that they greatly admired, that she was able to buy her freedom and that of her sons. She placed her son in college. Education was a dream that for herself she was not able to fulfill, but she wanted to make sure her son was taken care of. And then she made her way first to Baltimore and then to Washington, D.C., where she arrived even before the Lincolns did. And she began building a reputation for herself as the best seamstress, the best dressmaker that all of the ladies of the social elite absolutely had to go to get their gowns.
She was a very forward-thinking woman. She was very driven in an upward direction for someone of that time who had been working with other families for years. At one point, she was basically she was making the money for a family that she was working for in order to provide for them. She was very focused on setting her own path.
Yes, that's absolutely right. At one point, she said that she was supporting a household of 17 to 19 people, and that was the white members of the family as well as the slaves in the household, too. And this was a point of pride for her, that she was able to keep all these people in food and clothing and shelter. But eventually, and I'm sure it didn't take very long, I'm sure a little resentment started to build up because she's working herself to exhaustion for all these other people when she really ought to be able to benefit herself and her own child. And that impetus, I think, is what made her refuse to give up when she wanted to buy her freedom. Even when he told her, don't ever bring this subject up again, she refused to let go of it. But when she was working for the household, she was hired out, which meant that she would go out and make dresses for other members of this, other citizens of the city, and her earnings would go back to the family. the Garland family. However, by hiring out like that, she was able to develop all the skills that she needed as an independent businesswoman, how to negotiate prices, how to interact with clients, how to purchase her own supplies and fabric and all of that. And she also was able to witness, both in Petersburg, Virginia, and here in St. Louis, other free, independent African-American women who were making it on their own. And she took inspiration from them, and that just strengthened her will all the more to make sure that she got freedom for herself and her son.
Going forward to her time in Washington, she began working with Mrs. Lincoln, and in studying their relationship, I think what really united them was sadly the idea of tragedy. Elizabeth had a grown son who actually died in the war, and then later on, Mrs. Lincoln's own son, Willie, died about, I think, a year or so after that. And so they kind of had this bond together. And at the same time, you know, Elizabeth was able to throw herself into her work, but Mrs. Lincoln was just kind of adrift.
Well, Mrs. Lincoln suffered a lot of tragedy in her life, as we all know. She had four sons. Three of them predeceased her. One of her sons died very young, before the family even entered the White House. Her son Willie died while as Abraham Lincoln was president. And then another son died when he was 18. And then, of course, her husband was killed right in front of her. So she dealt with a lot of tragedy in her life. And I think when people tend to characterize Mary Lincoln as being erratic or extreme or unbalanced, I wish that people would be a little bit more generous and recall all of the tragedies she experienced. But as you said, Elizabeth Keckley also knew what it was to lose a husband and to lose a son. And they supported each other during these times of tragedy. And Mary Lincoln learned that Elizabeth was not only her advisor and assistant with matters of fashion, but she became a true and loyal confidant that Mary Lincoln absolutely relied on, not only while she was in the White House, but for years thereafter.
Yeah, I really like the fact that when Elizabeth kind of came to her with the issue of money, that Mary Todd Lincoln tried to get her a job. It didn't work out, but eventually, but she did work to try to help support her in the same way that they were able to have that bond with each other as friends would.
That's right.
Because my initial idea was, okay, you know, they work together. You know, they mm-hmm. have that friendly kind of relationship and bond. But no, they actually supported each other.
Well, they did. It was an employer-employee relationship. That's certainly true. But they saw one another through tragedies. And just as Elizabeth supported Mrs. Lincoln when she was going through her losses, so too did Mary Lincoln help Elizabeth. She expressed a lot of compassion when Elizabeth Keckley lost her son, and one of the letters that Mary Lincoln wrote to her was one of Elizabeth's cherished keepsakes. And also, she supported Elizabeth Keckley and some of her other great endeavors. When emancipation came and so many newly freed slaves flooded Washington seeking new lives for themselves, there were thousands of refugees who came into Washington City. And Elizabeth was moved by their plight. They were living in squalid camps. They were very ill prepared for lives as independent citizens. And so Elizabeth decided to found this Contraband Relief Association to provide not only for their food and clothing and shelter, all those immediate necessary needs within the camps, but also to give them very important training skills, how to seek employment, how to negotiate a wage, and then something that was a revelation, how to leave an employer that wasn't treating you fairly. Literacy was important, and then Elizabeth, with her sewing skills, instructed a lot of the women in the camps on how to sew, how to tend the household and all of those things. And so her legacy is very profound, and we can't measure it today, because for every person she taught in the camps, they went on to make better lives for their families, all new and newly introduced to freedom. And we'll never know the extent of the difference she made in their lives, but it truly was profound. And Mary Lincoln was one of Elizabeth's greatest supporters in this endeavor, and whether it was fundraising or just trying to draw people's attention to the plight of all of these newly freed people coming into the city.
Coming up, more of my conversation with Jennifer Shiverini. She's the author of Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. a story about Elizabeth Keckley, a former slave with St. Louis ties, who went on to develop a personal relationship with the First Lady. I'm Erin Williams, and this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. This is St. Louis on the Air. Now back to more of my conversation with Jennifer Shiverini. She's the author of Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker. Now, there is one point in the book that, to me, almost serves as a point of foreshadowing. I believe it was in 1862, and there was a young reporter who heard about what Elizabeth Keckley had been doing, working with Mrs. Lincoln, establishing herself as a woman of Washington, and wanted to do an interview with her. So Elizabeth allows her to do the interview. And as a journalist, she kind of had her way with her words. And Elizabeth did not like the way that she was presented. She didn't bash Mrs. Lincoln or anything like that, but she just didn't like the way that she kind of seemed like this somewhat hopeless woman who was just holding on to everything she had in order to make her life seem sustainable. And she says this quote. She says, quote, "If one is going to write the life of another, one should always, always write the truth. Anything else is a waste of paper and ink and words."
That's right.
And then later, Elizabeth goes on and after, you know, years after Mary Todd Lincoln has left the White House and is kind of getting this reputation as being an unsettled woman, Elizabeth tries several ways in order to try to support her friend. She tried to get people to speak on her behalf. She tried to sell her things. She tried all this stuff. And so Elizabeth decides, I'm going to write a book. And it was not in any way intended to be a tell-all.
That's right.
But it just kind of went off the rails a little bit.
Well, it did. And Elizabeth wrote her book in part to tell her own life story. It was called Behind the Scenes. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to account for her own life in slavery, partly because, as she says, so many of her friends said, your life story is so fascinating, you really should write it down. So in part, she wanted to tell her own autobiography, her own life, how she rose from being born into slavery in 1818 in Virginia to becoming to such a high position that she was an intimate of the White House, and that gave her quite a lot of social status in Washington. And so part of it was to tell her own life story. But then there was something that became known as the old clothes scandal. Mary Lincoln left the White House with lots of debt. She enjoyed shopping. For her, it was a sort of therapy, and everyone was very happy to let the First Lady of the land take whatever she wanted on credit because they were sure they would be paid later. So she racked up thousands of dollars in debt. And so to offset this, she decided in 1867 or so to sell all of the gowns that she had worn at the White House, knowing she'd have no occasion for them again. Now, Elizabeth had her concerns about whether this scheme would be successful, but she wanted, as you said, to support Mary Lincoln. But it turned into such a scandalous affair. It became known as the old clothes scandal. So in part, Elizabeth wanted to tell her own history, but she also wanted to explain what went on behind this old, what became known as the old clothes scandal.
And as a person would do for, I'm sorry to interrupt, but as a person would do for a friend, you would want other people to know that your friend has done good stuff.
Right. And that's one of her big objections all along. She was very indignant about the way that Mary Lincoln was often portrayed in the press because, of course, they focused on the juiciest bits, her missteps, her mistakes. And Elizabeth was always indignant that they didn't focus enough on the very good things that she did. When the Lincolns came to the White House, it was in a state of disrepair. And Mary Lincoln took it upon herself to make it a showplace worthy of a great nation, as she saw it. And eventually, even her critics grudgingly admitted, okay, yeah, she did a good job with it. Another thing that Mary Lincoln was very involved with was taking care of soldiers and veterans. She visited their camps in Washington. She went to the hospitals and brought them treats, wrote letters home for them if they could not on their own. And Elizabeth always wished that the newspapers would pay more attention to the good she did instead of, oh, she ransacked the stores of New York again. So, as she says in the introduction to her memoir, in part she wrote because she wanted to place Mary Lincoln in a better light before the world, because she thought if they could see the motives behind the decisions that Mary Lincoln made, which weren't always great, they would understand that her heart was in the right place, and then they would have more compassion and more understanding. But that is not at all how it turned out.
That is not at all how it turned out. It just – Mary Todd Lincoln was upset by it. The press just kind of had a field day about it. And what got me is that in 2013, if someone writes a tell-all book, it just flies off the shelves.
Absolutely.
And they're able to kind of – emerge and maybe a little damaged, but even in a larger light than before. And with Elizabeth, it just completely unraveled everything that she had ever built socially as well as financially.
Well, and that's true. And what really bothered me was that the criticism of Elizabeth Keckley, well, there were two things, two main categories of what bothered me about the criticism. The first was that they started criticizing her book before it was even published. So without writing a word of it, without reading a word of it, they had already condemned it as this servant girl telling tales about her betters, which was utterly unfair. And then the other strong objection I have to it is that it was such an attack on her personally for daring to write it all. So it wasn't even what she said about the Lincolns and what she revealed about the marriage of Abraham and Mary Lincoln. Although, of course, there was plenty of criticism of that, too. But the fact that this former slave would dare to write about her betters, and there was all kinds of lamentations about the press about, well, what will we do if every Dinah and Bridget, two, of course, very racial stereotypes, names chosen particularly to target African-Americans mm-hmm. and to target the Irish. What will we do with every Bridget and Dinah starts picking up a pen and writing stories about the families they serve? So the fact that her book was not even given a fair reading at the time of its publication was really outrageous, I think.
Why do you think – when that happened, I thought about Frederick Douglass and the fact that his biography had gone over so well and everyone thought of him as this great orator and this man who had emerged from so much prejudice into a self-made person. And then you have Elizabeth and it just kind of doesn't end up as well. And then there was also another book, Narrative of the Life of a Slave
mm-hmm.
Girl.
Harriet Jacobs.
Yeah, Harriet Jacobs. It just seems like the women couldn't get that break that the men could.
Well, I think we're dealing with 19th century – issues of sexism, and in Elizabeth's case and in Harriet Jacobs' case, of course, race also plays a part in it. One of the things that was interesting about Frederick Douglass's book is that it came out before the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So the abolitionist movement was very interested in publishing these kind of memoirs and narratives to get a lot of attention to their cause, to convince maybe a reluctant public that of the evils of slavery, because there was a big argument on the other side of all the good things that slavery did, which, you know, from the 21st century we know were utterly wrong and a lot of propaganda. But Elizabeth's book was one of the first histories of a slave woman's life written after emancipation and published after emancipation. So whereas there was this strong impetus to get these stories out to push the cause of abolition, and it was quite successful. Elizabeth's case was very much different. North and South wanted to heal from the battles of the Civil War and the strife between the states. And unfortunately, a lot of the advances that African Americans made during the Civil War were set aside and sometimes even undone in the urge to create reconciliation between the North and the South. So they were, again, set aside so that these, what were considered more pressing issues from the majority population were taken care of. And I think Elizabeth got caught up in that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And a lot, the criticism of her book, if you read these, the book reviews at the time, the criticism is so markedly drawn along matters of race, gender and class, with a very broad brush, and we can recognize the stereotypical words and phrases very clearly from our perspective, perhaps not quite so much back then, but Elizabeth's response to the publication of her book, she was very shocked. She had always prided herself on her dignity, on her integrity, on her outstanding reputation, which had helped her become such a successful businesswoman. And then to have her well-meaning book that she thought would vindicate Mary Lincoln and herself for her role in the old clothes scandal, to have it have the exact opposite result was just absolutely shocking to her. It was quite a blow. But she also took a lesson from Mary Lincoln and how she responded to this public outcry. Mary Lincoln, whenever she was criticized or a negative article appeared in the press about her, she would go on these letter-writing campaigns. She'd try to muster up support and justify herself and get people to rally to her side. And invariably, it always made things worse. Whereas Elizabeth decided that she remembered how that had failed for Mary Lincoln, and she realized that when you're in dealing with this kind of scandal, the best way to overcome it is just to live an exemplary life and to prove to everyone who you really are by the way you carry yourself. And so that's what she did. She did.
She was able to establish, you know, a nice, modest lifestyle after that. She continued to sew. She even had, almost want to say, a fellowship at Wilberforce when she helped to establish their home economics department. She even... She continued to do more writing and more speaking. You know, she didn't give up.
Absolutely.
But I do want to go back to one thing about her relationship with Mary Todd Lincoln and with this quilt. Mm-hmm. She realized that their relationship was damaged, and as a friend would, she tried to reconcile it. And so she created this quilt after Tad died, I believe.
Well, and this is where we bring in the fiction writer's art.
Okay.
The quilt that I mentioned earlier has been attributed to Elizabeth Keckley.
Okay.
And it was said to have been made with fabrics left over from the dressmaking that Elizabeth did for Mary. There are breaks in the provenance of the quilt, which is actually still in existence. It's mm-hmm. with the Kent State University Museum in Ohio. And I had the very good fortune to be able to see it in person when I was researching this book. But it can't be traced perfectly back to Elizabeth Keckley. So I brought in, you know, what the fiction writers do, I try to develop a plausible explanation for how this quilt might have come about, what would have inspired Elizabeth Keckley to make it, and if, as the story goes, she had made it for Mary Lincoln, how did it end up not with Mrs. Lincoln or with anyone from the Lincoln family, how did it end up in Ohio? And so I imagined, as quilters do, you know, saving all that fabric and having memories evoked by this particular silk or this particular wool. And I can imagine Elizabeth thinking about what grand occasion she made this dress for or that one. And that's something that seemed important to Elizabeth. Elizabeth did treasure certain mementos from her life, from her travels, from her son's letters, things of that nature. She asked for, as special gifts, certain mementos from President Lincoln. And after his assassination, Mary Lincoln gave her a few more articles. So Elizabeth appreciated those kind of tangible reminders of the past. Mary Lincoln had the very opposite response. Memories of lost loved ones brought unimaginable pain to Mary Lincoln. So when her sons died, she wanted to give away their clothes and toys immediately. When her husband was assassinated, she kept a few very precious things and wanted to get rid of everything else right away. So I thought about the very different reaction to both of these women, not only to scandal, which we see how they responded in very different ways, but also to the loss of loved ones. And I thought, now this quilt is something that Elizabeth would cherish and treasure for all of the memories it evoked. But I couldn't imagine Mary having the same reaction, even to something so beautiful, even to something with such magnificent artistry, because of the memories it would evoke. So I tried to create a plausible explanation for why Elizabeth might have made it for Mary Lincoln and why, ultimately, it didn't end up in Mary's possession.
And that broke her heart. But eventually, I think that was kind of when she decided that she physically had to move on from that. But why do you think that she pined for her so deeply? It seems like she pined for her so deeply, for their friendship and for what they had.
That's right.
And continued to try to reach out and try to reach out and try to reach out, sending condolences and keeping up with the family and things like that. Why do you think she can, if she were so set on living a well-meaning life after the scandal, why do you think she continued to hold on?
Well, and accounts of Elizabeth Keckley from her contemporaries written sometime after her death did say that she regretted the loss of their friendship, which was, of course, brought about because of the publication of the memoir. to the end of her days. I mean, she went on. She made a great life for herself. She became a teacher at college, which to someone who had always yearned for formal education must have been quite a triumph. To have been denied that herself and yet to be able to teach others, I think must have been a high point in her life. But I think part of it is she cherished that friendship when they had it. The relationship was very important to her. And also, she knew that her intentions were good. She had not intended to hurt Mary in any way. And she wanted reconciliation. She wanted to explain how she truly felt. Now, Mary, on the other hand, her history demonstrated very clearly that if you wronged her, or if she thought you wronged her, she was more than willing to just cut you out of her life, whether you were her sister, whether you were a childhood friend, or whether you were the woman that she once called her best and dearest friend, which she had once said about Elizabeth Keckley. So that's another way in which these women are very different. Elizabeth cared about reconciliation and, you know, explaining herself and mending fences, whereas Mary Lincoln just wanted to excise Elizabeth out of her life. And I think that the loss of that friendship was greater on Mary Lincoln's part than on Elizabeth's. Because although Elizabeth seems, as on record, to have pined more for Mary Lincoln, Elizabeth had lots of friends. She had the respect of her community. She was well-remembered. She was admired. Whereas Mary Lincoln managed to alienate one friend and family member after another, and she withdrew further and further into isolation. And there were times in her life where, if she had not closed the door to that relationship, I think Elizabeth could have been a great friend and help to her later in her life. But Mary just abandoned any hope of that, unfortunately. I think that's one more tragedy in her life, the loss of that good friendship that Elizabeth Keckley was willing to give her even after all that had passed between them.
And sometimes you just have to say thank you and move on.
That's so right. And I think Elizabeth did that. I think she ultimately did.
That's Jennifer Chivarini, author of Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, during her conversation with St. Louis Public Radio's Aaron Williams. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with University of Missouri St. Louis Chancellor Tom George. We'll talk about the university's 50-year celebration and trends in higher education. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.